You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Get lost.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Welcome, everybody, to Extra Time, driven by Continental for the last time in 2020. What a year it's been. We started this year about 5,000 years ago, and we have made it to the end. I am David Goss, joined by Matt Doyle and Kaylin Carr. No Andrew Wiebe today, as we are finally ending our coastal bias. Andrew Wiebe is headed to Kansas or Missouri. I'm not sure the difference, to move there permanently. And he will be hosting the show from there on out, which means, you guys, we've got flyover country involved. Mm-hmm. This show officially represents all of America.
Did you see the little kid who is doing the extra time Wiebe intro impression on Twitter? Wiebe responded to him, and I was just, it was awesome. First of all, shout out to that kid if he's listening. I don't remember his name. But it was also kind of scary in the sense that, like, there's a whole army of Wiebe minions being like, from New York. I was like, oh, man. A lot of different range of emotions watching that. Kind of like when I go around the country, or when I used to, and meet everybody who loves Matt Doyle. Just how many people
we are
Team Doyle around there. Yeah, it's amazing.
I appreciate being in press boxes where people are ripping Matt Doyle and they don't even know I'm there. They're just doing it for themselves. And you get that little peek into the real world view of what's going on.
But do you think this will change our coverage? Like, do you think we will now be covering way more of, like, it'd be very many Minnesota focused? And
yeah, because we've never talked about any of those teams.
Yeah, Adrian Heath has gotten no love on the show, right?
I will bet you this. The amount of shows that we start at the wrong time because Wiebe messed up time zones will be way over 10.
Yeah.
If the over under there is 10.5, I'm taking the over by far on that one. But congratulations to Andrew. He was able to get out just before a blizzard dumped down on New York. And me and Matt Doyle are holding it down there. Of course, Kaylin Carr getting our West Coast in. So we're pretty spread out. I don't really think we need anyone else. Charlie's in Boston.
Yeah, Charlie's in Boston. But Kaylin was actually spent a lot of the year in Atlanta as well. So we had the South covered. We don't really have anybody in Texas. So I don't know. Maybe we're sending Wiebe on a road trip down
there. Is Kansas that far from Texas?
I don't know. It's all flyover country, right?
There you go. Anything west of the Hudson, I don't even understand. I've never even heard of it. We've got a great final show of the year for you, though. We've got an interview coming up with Claudio Reyna as Austin FC starts to really beat down the door and make a bunch of moves, a bunch of trades. The expansion draft, which happens on Tuesday, which you two so expertly helped host. And we'll talk to him about all the moves they made, including a big trade that just went down a few minutes ago for Alex Ring from NYCFC, Claudio Reyna's former club. So we'll ask him about all of that. And CCL is upon us at Exploria Stadium. Where else would it happen? I think it's the most CCL thing that could ever happen. And then we've got a bunch of free agency, re-entry draft, rumors, waivers, everything going on. That's what we're really excited about. So let's get into it.
I'm surprised that Extra Time wasn't sent down to the CCL bubble just to really be there and report from CCL.
I think there's a chance we could have played in the tournament. Didn't NYCFC take a goalkeeper from Orlando alone?
Yeah, the bench was real thin. It was Mason Stajuar, who's I think the third string keeper for Orlando, was the backup for NYCFC. He's got to feel pretty lucky he didn't play in that game because NYCFC got pounded.
That's very old school MLS. I guess played during the winter offseason for Chivas USA, one of my proudest moments. The old reserve league was like, you know, just grabbing dudes. It was awesome.
Yeah. I wish the reserve league was here so Henri would play again, because that's all I've heard is that coaches played half the positions. It could be coming down the pipe next year. We'll be a lot more professional and a lot more organized. Mm-hmm. Something we'll talk about in 2021 when we're all back. But let's finish 2021. CCL, disappointment. We all know it's coming. You sign up, you log in. We had four MLS teams going into this round, three of which were playing a second leg of a game that happened in February of 1975. and they were just closing out that series. And then LAFC facing off against Cruz Azul in a one game match because they hadn't played their first leg to move into the semifinals. So to start it off with, Montreal beat Olympia 1-0, which was not enough to get over the Hondurans. So the Hondurans are the first Central American team in the semifinals, I think, in 5 years. Yep. And the first Honduran team ever in this format of the CCL.
No, the first Honduran team since, I think, 2009.
Which is a different format.
Okay, yeah, since they eliminated the group stage thing. Okay,
and they renamed, I think at the time that was Campeones, CONCACAF Campeones Cup. And now it's CCL. Maybe I'm wrong. You could be right.
I think you're wrong about that one.
So Olympia will face off against Tigres, who beat NYCFC. They came into that game, NYCFC trailing 1-0 on away goals. And then, as we said, NYCFC, a little bit of a short team, some positive COVID-19 tests, as well as some contract tracing, meaning some players were forced to stay back in New York. They lose in that game. Then we had Atlanta going into a game they were already down 3-0 in. And they dominated Club America like you knew they would. And Jackson Conway comes off the bench, bangs a header into the corner, celebrations galore, and Atlanta loses 3-1 in the overall series. And then we finally got to a game where we had a chance. LAFC facing off against Cruz Azul. We all know what happened to Cruz Azul a few weeks ago in the Liguilla. Up 4-0 in the first leg.
Yeah, I don't think everybody knows. Yeah.
I thought we talked about it on the show. They were up 4-0 in the first leg after against Pumas. And in the second leg, they lost 4-0 to be eliminated because tie goes to the higher seed in historic fashion. And it's kind of been Cruz Azul's MO over the last 35, 40 years to do things like that. On this show, last show, Doyle, we said LAFC has a chance to win this. Then there's a massive gap. Then NYCFC in Montreal. And Atlanta, and that clearly was correct. But from LAFC, they had a lot of chances. They finally get it done late on. They win it 2-1. What did you see from them? And now they're moving on to play Club America. Do you still feel they have a chance to win this?
Yeah, they do. The way they dominated Cruz Azul kind of surprised me. And as you said, they missed some chances. They could have gone up 3, you know, going into halftime up 3-1. It was Rossi hitting the bar. Well, to be fair, that was a spectacular fingertip save from the young Cruz Azul goalkeeper. But like, that's a chance that you would expect Rossi to put away. There was two other like very big chances. One from Mark Anthony Kay in the first half. You know, kind of an open header on a set piece as well. It could have been very, very different. And I think that maybe not playing in over a month led to a lack of sharpness that had LAFC kind of allow Cruz Azul to stick around. But then in the second half, it was like I kind of expected Cruz Azul to come out and play the way that they played throughout most of the Liguilla and you know the tail end of the Liga MX season, and they couldn't get on the ball. The LAFC midfield was dominant. The back line sort of reduced their errors. And then once the kid Opoku got the screamer of a goal from the corner, like, okay, so it's 2-1 now, and you expect Cruz Azul to throw in the kitchen sink, and they had nothing. They tried to, but bringing Latif Blessing on and changing a couple of things up from Bob Brett, like Blessing was winning every ball and pressuring four players at once in central midfield. It was a monstrous performance, and it was just at the end of the night, there was zero question that LAFC were the better team. Which is always pleasant. It's always nice to see an MLS team do that against a Liga MX team. But to have it be a Cruz Azul team, which was really good all year, and also in the context of what LAFC did to Club León to start the season, and of course León just crowned Mexican champions, to have that series win to open it, and then this one-off to get into the semifinals. No matter what happens against Club America, it's a great achievement from LAFC. But I don't think they're thinking of it like that. I think that they see a chance to get past Club America and make the CCL final.
Kaylin, when I watch this LAFC team, I know it's been a tough year. The first thing that comes to mind is this team has more juice than I think any team in MLS history in that they just create chances and they just keep doing it and doing it. And they are moments where they've got almost too many runners in angles. And you saw that over the course of last night as well, but there's MLS teams that go up against Liga MX teams that can't get into the final third at any point. And it looked like Vela maybe wasn't 100% back, but he's close, and he's closer than he was five, 6 weeks ago when he came back from injury. And if he's there, that seems to be the key for LAFC to try and get over a Club America and potentially a Tigres or Olympia in the final.
Yeah, I agree with Doyle. I think there was maybe a little bit of lack of game match sharpness, especially around goal. But part of the reason we really liked LAFC going into this is the roster build, the depth. I mean, the winning goal, and then you look also at the depth. Like to bring on Latif Blessing and Rodriguez in the second half made a big difference. But yeah, Vela looked so much better too. And you know, how often do we watch these matches against CCL and you say, oh, you know, the top end talent seems like it's maybe on the other side. Well, in this game, when you have Vela, that completely changes it because he was the best player on the field. Even when you look at the way that, you know, the Mexican players were looking at him, it's like they're like trying to talk to him or get close, like kind of get his respect a little bit, and they couldn't get close to him. The way that he, you know, this is why I thought in the playoffs, that game against the Sounders just came a little bit too early for them. And he just, when he receives the ball and he's static, he's a different player. And what was happening was you saw him receiving the ball in motion, getting into wide areas. And from there, it's really impossible because once he builds up a little bit of motion and movement and starts running, it's, you know, he just glides by guys. It was pretty amazing. So to see him fit and healthy. And then the other big difference, I would say, is the back line for LAFC.
Murillo.
Yeah, they looked really solid. They didn't really look super threatened, really. They looked very comfortable throughout the match. There was that one sort of shaky play from Vermeer with the goal that get called back early on. But other than that, and a couple of set pieces, it really looked like set pieces was maybe the only way that LAFC was going to get hurt. And for an LAFC team that hasn't looked secure, that's been their sort of big weak point throughout the season this year that's let themselves down. I thought that was a really promising thing because you can have Vela going forward and doing well, but you can't really trade off the same way that and make up those same gaps that they could maybe throughout the MLS season in CCL as you go deeper and deeper into the tournament. So the fact that they were able to look strong in the back, I thought was also a huge positive.
So one interesting thing, and Kaylin mentioned the depth for this LAFC team, Brian Rodriguez, who had tested positive for COVID-19 and spent the time quarantining and maybe not in that level of fitness, now coming back for his first game. He came off the bench. Latif Blessing also came off the bench. Danny Musovski got the start at center forward for this game. Cifuentes got the start in central midfield. Doyle, do you think Bob Bradley sticks with the same roster because he got the performance he wanted? Or does Latif come in and slide Rossi in the middle on the wing? Or does he come in central midfield? There's a few options here for Bob to move things around. What do you expect to see against America?
I would imagine that if there's going to be one change, it would be Latif coming in from the start. Cifuentes is a nice player, and you can see, you know, why he's so highly rated in Ecuador, and he does some really good things. But Latif is almost unique in terms of the two-way impact he can have, because he's like, just as a defending like that as a number 10 is not something you see outside of like a few very dogmatic teams like Liverpool or RB Leipzig. But he's also very clever and very good off the ball. So he opens the game up with his constant movement. And you when you have passers like Marc-Anthony Kay, Edouard Atuesta, and Carlos Vela in there, they're going to be able to take advantage of that. So I just think he makes, even if he's only 60, 65 minutes fit, I think you start him because he just makes you a more dynamic team right from the start, allows you to control the game. And as we saw against Cruz Azul, once LAFC start controlling the game, they just get stronger and stronger and stronger. So I would expect that one. I think Musovski's got to start because Opoku, while, you know, he was fun, or he scored a fun goal, he otherwise really, really struggled. And
he played half the time on the wing.
Yeah, I don't think he's really a center forward. And then, you know, Rodriguez didn't look fit to me. He was okay, but he didn't look like he had the same kind of burst. So I would be surprised if they were confident in his ability to go from the start, especially if you're also starting Latif, who isn't 90 minutes fit either.
Now, reminder, no extra time in these games or added time. So it goes to PKs after 90, which gives you, I think, more flexibility to start a guy like Latif because you don't have to then sub him out and get through another 60 minutes gameplay.
My one worry is Blackman. What's his injury status? You know, he really gutted through that one last night, but you wonder how did he respond on not a lot of time to recover. And so that one worries me, because when we've seen how LAFC has to shuffle and move pieces, then does Lateef go back to outside back again? Do they have to then shift things around? I mean, it is, it's not, he was really strong. And I think if they can get him back, that will be big. I agree. Lateef comes in for Cifuentes, ideally, and Musovski stays in the lineup. I thought he does a really good job of helping to set their pressure, their line of confrontation. And Lateef changes the way they play overall. I mean, just the way they're, you know, you could hear in the match, especially with no supporters there, Bob driving the team forward and, you know, how they shift and move and push and then drop and be compact. And Lateef is like a rocket ship that like takes this team seriously. The team to the next level is the way he's able to close people down, the way he's able to break plays up. I mean, even the little ones where you're up and he's, you know, tackling a guy and the ball goes out for a throw in. I mean, that does so much for the team, just to catch your breath and to know that you have a guy that can do that. And then what he gives you on the other side of it as well. So, yeah, I think he comes in for Cifuentes ideally, but Blackman, his health might change the picture overall.
Yeah, a reminder that one of the weird parts of this CCL is MLS teams have had to put in whether or not they're going to pick up options on players and things like that already. So Bradley Wright Phillips not there. Could be breaking coming my back heart. To LAFC.
Absolutely breaking my heart. Like, hit whatever number he's asking for and have Bradley Wright Phillips for this tournament. Like, it would have been like, Danny Musovski is a good player. He's shown throughout the year that he can be clever and add value to a team when he's surrounded by high level players. But like, Bradley Wright Phillips in these games as like your third option. Oh, it's
do you think if
heart.
You go to a final though that you'll you would think about that, right? Would you not?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I don't know what the like I think once you set the roster ahead of this tournament, sure. The they can't like have him they can't ship him in on Sunday afternoon.
They did bring Diego Palacios in at the last minute. I have zero idea what's happening with rosters in this competition.
It's
I
think 2020, man.
There's a bunch of academy kids on the roster for LAFC as well. So we'll see what happens. Congratulations again to Jackson Conway, his debut with Atlanta United, as well as a goal against Club America, a good young homegrown striker.
David, let me ask you this. If I had offered you this before this round of games where three of the four MLS teams win, only one advances, though in pretty dominant fashion, and then there's one crushing loss, would you have taken that? Would you have did you consider this a kind of a successful 2 days for MLS teams in CCL?
Yes. I thought Montreal was going to get a second goal. So in that game, I felt like, okay, we're going to get two teams moving on and have a shot from both sides of the semifinals. But I didn't think Montreal had a realistic chance against Tigres. So therefore, our best bet is having LAFC get to the final. And so I would take this. Eric Lopez made his debut as well for Atlanta. So that's something to be excited about with the whole roundabout way he's ended up on that team. Last piece we have to add in here. André Pierre Gignac scored an unbelievable header against New York NYCFC.
Add in here. This should be the focus of our show.
I know. It should have been after that, he went to run to the side and then was like, no, ran back to the goal, leaned against the post, a la Thierry Henry for New York Red Bulls. And apparently Gignac and Henry had met in the hotel the day before to hang out. And then Gignac said in a quote afterwards about it, well, we were playing New York. And I was trying to respect Henri. I would have celebrated in front of him in the next game, but they had already lost.
Yeah, he said in his face. I would have celebrated in his face.
And he said, Henri played for New York Red Bulls, and everyone knows New York is red. So I had to do that celebration against NYCFC, which means one, Gignac is a huge ETR fan. You know he's an ETR fan. And two, there's a decent chance he's going to come and play for the Hartford Athletic next year because he loves the Northeast rivalries so much.
I would buy a Gignac Hartford Athletic shirt for sure. I would buy that.
May I submit? We should put that into the open of Extra Time. I feel like that quote was good enough. We should put Gignac in the open. He also said New York is red maybe two or three times.
Nice.
Like he doubled down to be like, I know what this is, and I need to make this point very clear, which is such a savage move just to like, you know, run the team off the pitch, score against them, drag them based on some old lore between, you know, your buddy you just had a coffee with.
And we retired before NYCFC even existed.
It's bizarre, but it was awesome. Just very, very cool. Yeah, and I think he's probably been watching the show.
Big you got to say, the guy's probably the greatest player to play club in this region. Like, I mean, the things he can do.
What he's done the past, what he's done in the past 6 years in terms of leading what we all agree is the at least the team of the decade, at the very least, if not maybe the best. But there's one thing they don't have. Tigres do not have a CONCACAF Champions League crown.
I thought you were going to say a New York Derby win.
Yeah, they don't have a. They have plenty it's of Monterey Derby wins.
Gignac doesn't have it in his career so far.
Yeah, that's true. But no, it's like Tigres.
Can you do it on a cold night at Yankee Stadium?
Yeah, right. Tigres, with the way they played, it's tough for anybody to beat them, but it was obviously very, very tough for NYCFC to do so without their starting defensive midfielder. It's called a segue, David. Take it.
Thank you. And on that note, let's move to Austin FC. They had their expansion draft on Tuesday. 5 picks made, 1 traded in Kamal Miller to Montreal, and we'll talk about all their moves coming up in just a little bit. So they selected Danny Huson, Jared Stroud, Brady Scott, and Joe Corona. But the big news just coming down moments ago is they've traded for Alex Ring from NYCFC, $500K in GAM in 2021, $250K in GAM in 2022, potentially rising all the way to a total of $1.25 million. For the 29-year-old former Finnish international, because he doesn't play international right now. This happened just as we were starting the show. You guys, initial reactions, you kind of broke down Austin's roster heavily over the last 48 hours with your work on the expansion draft. How does this piece now fit into what Austin's been building?
Perfectly. Alex Ring is a top 5 D-mid in the league. He's still in his prime. We saw the success that Nashville had this past year, and a lot of it came from obviously getting the back line right, but like a lot of it came from that engine room with Dax McCarty and Anibal Godoy, just MLS veterans who know the position in the league and know how to do work. And now with Ring, you have a guy who is at, or even I would say above, that level. The past couple of years he's been just superb. It is the right way to spend your allocation money. If you had go out on the market to get a guy like this, you're probably spending $4 or $5 million. Spend, you know, a third of that in the league, plug him right in. You know he can do it in MLS. So I think it's just a great move for Austin. It's probably the right move for NYCFC as well.
Yeah,
because they have James Sands coming back. They have in Justin Hack and Tavon Gray, two more academy kids who I think really fit that role. And they have Kasha Acevedo, the Uruguayan, kind of a 6, kind of an 8, who can play that role as well. So they are stocked at D-mid. It's tough to trade a guy who's been as good for them as Ring has been over the past few years, but that's the business. And you have to, you have to make tough decisions. And I think, so for both teams, I really like this one.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think, you know, we saw the Red Bulls move on from Dax McCarty and Sasha Clifton. It feels a little bit kind of like that, where they feel good about their young players like Tyler Adams or others coming through. And so I think it does make sense for New York City and for Austin. You get a captain. So, you can just mark that down because he's been a leader. That's the way he plays. But he'll be big in the dressing room as well. And so you look at how they talked about Joe Corona during the expansion draft, how he will, ball security, wanting to keep the ball, be a facilitator. You also think of the way Josh Wolf sort of maybe alluded towards maybe a number 10 DP coming in. We asked him about that and he seemed to sort of dodge the question, but also at the same time, maybe tip his hat that was going to be coming. And then, but you put those three pieces together and you start looking at, the way Doyle was talking about what a center midfield could look like for Austin FC. That's really big. That's really big because you're going to have it's a new team to have an expansion team. We saw this exactly a point with Nashville, how important that could be. That's starting to look pretty promising for me. So I love the signing, and Ring is, top 5, maybe top 3. I think when he's healthy and good, he is that good of a D-mid.
Well, he's one of the best on the ball, on top of all the things he can do defensively. So it kind of allows Josh Wolf to play a few different ways. And it feels like Joe Corona, when they do sign him and all those things, can kind of fit in pretty cleanly alongside him. And then that 10 you mentioned for NYCFC, Doyle, you mentioned all the depth in there, but they did sign him to a long-term contract about 2 years ago and mm-hmm. kind of put him on the front page of the website as like, this is the club, this is the captain, this is who we are. And he didn't seem to fit with Ronnie Dyla as well. And maybe that's because of the young talent coming through for NYCFC. Is this a sign of any form of rebuild or change? Or is this just they have the talent, let's try and get assets while we can?
I don't know. I don't know. We need to see what's coming next. I mean, I think I probably lean toward, you know, let's get assets while we can. But it also feels like Maxi Morales is not getting younger.
Yeah.
There are questions at center forward. There are questions on both wings, really, because the only above average winger they have is Tajiri Shradi, and he can't stay healthy. So I think... Look, I think this is going to end up being a big offseason for them. But we'll see. Things don't always go the way we expect.
So we have a number of these players now. We already heard about Nick Lima. It feels like there's a chance Austin still needs a starting goalkeeper. Brady Scott, just 22 years old, hasn't really played much. We assume they're going to try and get someone big at center back. That's why they moved on from Kamal Miller. Kalen, how do you feel about Austin FC right now? I know on Tuesday, you guys debated this a little. What's the expectations year one? But it feels like with another pickup here in Alex Ring, the way everything's going, playoffs has to be a success and not assumed, but they should be in the competition for it.
I think there's still a ways to go to decide that. I think that should be the goal. And Doyle and I go back and forth. Wanted to go back and forth a little bit on the show about this as far as what's the expectation, because I think we have seen that expansion teams can make the playoffs in their first year. And I'd say things for Austin, they've got a really nice little foundation going where I really like the Lima pickup. I know him and Wolf have worked together with the national team. I think Ring, we've gone through some of the nice pieces. I do have question marks as far as their attack right now. I mean, I am not super familiar with the Paraguayans that they're bringing in, but I haven't heard anybody tell me that they're like no-brainer stars in MLS. Mm-hmm. And then you look at going and getting Danny Husin, who they went and got clearly rate very highly, but seems like a pretty big question mark for me because he didn't play hardly at all. He's been injured. Even when he has played, he's been dangerous, but not even the clear out-and-out striker, more of a rotation guy in San Jose. So you got to hope that they're getting the 2018 version of Danny Husin, who I think had 12 goals and 4 assists. But that, you know, that was a couple of years ago. And so that's a big question mark for me. So I have more questions in the attack, but as you're building out a team, we saw it with Nashville. We've seen it with other teams in the past where it's just like, get the foundation part right. And then you can add those bigger signings are probably going to come a little bit later. Into January and February, and maybe even into the season a little bit, once they figure out what they have and then kind of build from there.
Well, we had a chance to talk to the guys who are making those moves and making the decisions. Claudio Reyna now, we got him on the line a little while ago. Let's take a listen to that now. Now time for our AT&T 5G call to the field. And there's only one person in MLS to call right now. He's doing the most work of anyone in the league. He's got a lot to do and it's been fun to watch. Over the last few days, Claudio Reyna, the head man at Austin FC. Claudio, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, been pretty busy.
So let's start with the most recent news, which happened about 20 minutes ago. You've traded for Alex Ring from NYCFC, a good chunk of allocation money going in the other direction. But just give me the background, because you've known Alex, obviously, for a while, your background with NYCFC. How did this move come about? How did this one play out? How long have you known this could be in the works? And how did it finally get done?
Well, we're chasing many players, to be honest, internally in MLS, making lots of offers and weighing them all up in our team build. And as we started to have an understanding of where some of these could play out, you know, we started to push for some more than others and just their quality, first of all, as a player. Obviously, I know Alex really well. He's not the captain for no reason. He's a great leader. He sets a really high standard every single day in training, knows our league. And I think this is really important now with the quality within the league that we try to get as many pieces internally ahead of 2021 as we continue to bring in also targets players from outside the international market. So, yeah, really happy. Just a player who can play as a six, also as an eight. He won't be a left winger for us, that's for sure. But he again, that did show his versatility because he's a player who has so many qualities. But we look to bring him in to play him as a six role and really link everything up in terms of how Josh wants to play. But yeah, really excited about it and another important piece of the squad.
You've been aggressive in the internal market, as you said, Nick Lima last week for 500 in allocation money and a good chunk going out as well for Julio Cascante and Uli Segura and Ben Sweat. How are you looking at the allocation money given to you as an expansion team? Because we see some teams go heavy using it to sign international players. The amount you put out for Alex Ring could rise to 1.2 million eventually. How have you processed that? How does it feel to kind of send out that number and make those moves?
Well, yeah, certainly, you know, the number seems big, but the upfront is 750. And, you know, the conditions, and a lot of them are really difficult to achieve. And in many cases, if we achieve them, we'll all be really happy. So will Alex. But I think the upfronts where we're looking at, and we think when you add it all up, we feel we added really good players that, you know, have started in this league, are starting caliber players. They know our league, which is very important. But it doesn't mean, you know, we're not going to be adding players from outside of MLS, but we just felt with so much going on, when you weigh things up, also, you know, knowing the players, knowing the qualities, they're all domestic as well. So given the growth of our league, we feel, you know, being able to get some green card quality players inside MLS was good to do. So, and then lastly, you know, players that are motivated for a new challenge, a new chapter in their career, it's something that you know, always notice when how guys, you know, come from another club where they've done well. And in some cases, maybe, you know, they sort of haven't. And we feel between top tier talent that's been performing at a high level and also players that just need a new start and a new, fresh, clean, opportunity in their careers is that something that we feel good about. So we have so much going on here at Austin FC. Players are enthusiastic about it. And, you know, we're really starting to fill out our roster with some really good players.
A giant chunk of snow just fell off my roof because you left New York, New Jersey, but we got a blizzard. You're enjoying things down in Texas with the warm heat. Let me ask you, though, about the expansion draft specifically, because that's why we brought you on. Then you made the big trade. How did you feel about how that day went down? You pick up four players and then you trade Kamal Miller. How did that experience go this time, maybe, rather than your last experience with NYCFC? And how does the group feel about the work that was done?
Yeah, we feel good. Well, starting with Kamal Miller, was a player that we got a great return in allocation and some other conditions in the 11th pick in the draft, which you know, we felt it was a really good offer. And then added players, in Danny Hosen, a player that can absolutely play in this league, start in this league, will be someone who fits into how we want to play. Also, his experience. We need some players like Alex who just know what it's about to get going and set a high standard. Jared Strout, someone who's got so much upside belt this year, did really well for Red Bulls, can play both left and right wing, and, you know, has a lot of a strong ability to get balls into the box with his left and right foot. Presses really well, works really hard. So someone that, again, while he's 24, he's just a player who's broken into first team soccer, and we think he's going to be a great addition. Brady Scott's a younger goalkeeper, was with the under 20s, and, you know, he still needs more experience, but someone who's, you know, going to be an excellent goalie in this league and, you know, needs a little bit more development, but is motivated and someone that, you know, for years have been tracking in the U.S. youth system. And Joe Corona, someone that, you know, knows our league, has played over 250 games, many of them abroad in Mexico. So he's someone that, you know, you put him in the lineup and he's going to do great. He's going to do fine. He's someone who's can play different positions, secure with the ball. And again, experienced player, you know, he's 30 years old. We have 29-year-olds, and we're going to continue to try to attract some younger players as well and just find this right blend of players to complement each other.
So this is your expertise, and for a lot of us, it's hard to understand. So try and explain to the fans, if you can, a player like Danny Huson and a little bit Joe Corona, although we've heard that at the Galaxy were negotiating with him, why take a player there in the expansion draft that is going to be available in the reentry draft? How do you process those different concepts and mechanisms, and how does that move come about?
Yeah, well, some of it's still sort of for us internally to keep, but we just, you know, we're speaking to Joe as well and how we could, you know, perhaps renegotiate a contract that works well. And, you know, he's great. Had a really good conversation with him after the expansion draft. And so, you know, again, first is just quality. You know, we try to pick up players that have quality and have value. And, you know, that's what we did. That was our priority. So Joe's a player who's a very good player, you know, played many, many games at LA Galaxy as well. And while their form was indifferent, you know, we saw within there a player that really would do well with us and someone that we can count on in a big game from day one. So, you know, we're speaking to him, and, you know, he didn't go in reentry, and we're going to, you know, continue to speak with him and see if we can keep him sort of for longer term.
So one of the things that I think a lot of people assumed about an Austin FC when this team got announced, as you started to put together your front office, was that there would be a heavy amount of, whether it's former Mexican international players or Liga MX players, dual national players, because of the massive Mexican American population in the city and the proximity to Mexico. We haven't seen those parts of the move come about. Is that part of your thinking? Is that something that's necessary or has to get done? And it seems like maybe Joe Corona might be a part of trying to build that pipeline.
Yeah, Joe has a strong connection with Mexico, having played, you know, the majority of his career there. And certainly fans are excited about him and that possibility. But yeah, it's, you know, explore players. I don't think, you know, we ever sit in a room and talk about a nationality. You know, we just look at players, and such a global game. Good players from everywhere. Certainly Latin America, there's a lot of players that have come to our league and done really well. You know, the challenge, in to be honest, is that, you know, there's sort of an inflation right now with players and Mexican players to MLS. So, you know, we need to be responsible with how we spend the money on players and our discretionary money. And, but, you know, we've been exploring it. We've been, you know, speaking to some players, and there is the possibility, but ultimately, you know, Josh and I, and supported by our owners, it's always a soccer decision and how the player will fit into the team. Of course, any added value that we can get to that, you know, for our fan base and the club, we'll certainly explore it. But, you know, we've sold out season tickets. our you know, sponsorship is doing amazing, and partnerships at the moment, you know, we're everything in that way is really positive. So there's no extra push, or, you know, from the business side or owners, that we have to sign a player from a certain country. The priority is soccer. So, but again, with that, there's so many players, maybe, you know, non-Mexican players playing in Mexico, of course, and obviously players from all over Latin America that we continue to monitor and scout. And, you know, it's again, it's a soccer first decision that we're focused on.
So what's left? You've got one DP spot left, obviously. You've got two wingers who are doing phenomenal down in South America and Copa Lib and South America and all their competitions. So you've got a DP spot left. What else? What's this roster build? What's the focus over the next few days and few weeks?
Yeah, I mean, we still need to add some more players up front. We have two DP spots, just to clarify. So,
So your one DP is Cecilio Dominguez so far?
Correct, yeah. So, you know, we certainly have those two additions to make. You know, we want to add some more pieces, of course, in midfield. We feel that, you know, more players there. Some more quality, really. I think we have some opportunities for players with, you know, Tam, that we're going to use Tam on. Obviously, our two DPs. We got the college draft after that with the number one pick that we think we'll have a really good player that we'll be able to add. But right now, today, we feel good. But right now here in the offices, we're continuing to look ahead and and add more quality to the team. And, you know, a mix of experienced players and certainly some younger players. I think that's also something that you'll see, is that we're going to add some younger players into the team as well. You know, and it's really exciting. You know, I think I've mentioned in a few other interviews that, you know, the enthusiasm for players wanting to come to Austin, to Austin FC, has been amazing. So, you know, we're excited about the opportunity to bring some exciting players to for our supporters.
I'm curious for you. You trade for Alex Ring, a guy you know from NYCFC. You trade for Nick Lima, and I think a lot of that came from Josh Wolf's experience with him with the national team. How has the split been between you two in building this roster out, the relationship you guys have had of trying to put this all together?
Yeah, I mean, there's not only Josh and I, but our other assistant coaches, you know, have input on players they've either coached or coached against. But at the end, we both have to feel good about it. So we're able to get feedback from each other, from other soccer coaches that we know. I know Nick really well also from many years, obviously, just watching him, but I've heard great things from a lot of the youth coaches and college coaches about the type of person he is, which adds to it, which gives us more comfort that we're adding the right piece, not only on the field, but off of it. And we talk about that. They're great guys. You know, Danny Hosen and Alex Ring played together way back when they were in their teens. So there's all these little connections. Cecilio Dominguez reached out to Joe Corona because they played together in Club America. So, you know, we see all these different connections, and, you know, it does help us. You know, Julio Cascante knows Ulises Segura from his time in Costa Rica and Saprissa. So having these players that complement each other, not only on the field and relationships off the field, you know, make us feel good about it. And, you know, but quality wise and also the characters they are, we get a lot of good feedback that we share. But ultimately, you know, we have to feel good together about the players that we're bringing and the investments we're making.
So let me ask you this. This has been debated on our show a little bit, and you can take this any way you want. What, now that you have some roster put together, but even before that, what is success in year one? What is the goal? What is the key, whether it's standings, performance, style, for Austin FC in 2021?
Yeah, a little bit of all of it, to be honest. I think we want to make the playoffs in year one. It was achieved by the expansion teams this year. Performance is very important, and how we play and how we stack up week in, week out, how we play and the development of our style of play, and as quickly as possible getting up to speed with that. But it's always continues to be a work, like any coach, you're always from game to game adjusting. But, you know, to be able to sit back and, you know, when you play a team and feel really confident that you can get a result home or away is, for me, puts me at ease and gives me a lot of confidence. And I think, you know, that just the credibility of us as a team and the respect, and, you know, when you have it, and, you know, my time in New York, you know, it, with internally with your colleagues, you know, in terms of the teams you're facing, and when you play each other, you just have that respect because, you know, that you have a good team or you're facing a good team. And, you know, I think that's for us internally when we're in this world. You know, when you compete, when you play, you know, you get the respects of your peers and other clubs, and taken seriously as a club that's not going to be easy to beat. So yeah, so all those things, but of course at the end, you know, the standings is important, and, you know, we want to get into the playoffs. And I think we say this every year, but the playoffs are just such fine margins. You look at Montreal this year, get knocked down last minute against New England, going all the way against Columbus and losing, you know, a tight game there. So, you know, first and foremost is getting up to speed and how we want to play, getting better all the time, earning that respect, and certainly getting into the playoffs.
Well, Claudio, I think you have to have a certain level of success there because you're in danger of becoming known as Gio Reyna's dad. If you don't do your own continuously, we got to give you one question to close out. On your son, I assume you taught him the long ball, one touch, flick over the goalkeeper at full speed, finish. What's it been like? How proud are you? And what do you see for him over the course of this year and the next few?
Yeah, well, first, just so proud of him, you know, and what he's achieved at such a young age. And, you know, he's always believed in himself. He's worked hard, very confident, but also grounded in terms of being around, you know, a locker room full of great players. He's surrounded by really motivated young players like Erling Haaland and Jadon Sancho and now Jude Bellingham. So the environment for him is perfect. Being able to adjust and play different positions, big games already in Champions League. It's all really amazing and unbelievable. But, you know, he's just wants to get better. He wants to improve. He knows that he's got so much more to learn. You know, just kind of taking everything in stride, and it's been a difficult year for everybody. I mean, the players and all the coaches deserve so much credit dealing with everything they dealt with. I know through my son what he's had to go through and sort of being away and being sort of quarantined and not being able to have a normal life in a foreign country and still, you know, be able to stay focused on his soccer has been great. So just, you know, just continues to grow and mature, and just, of course, super proud of him. I get so nervous all the time. I can't even explain it. It's the worst feeling. I look forward to every one of his games, and then when the games start, I'm just so nervous. But you know, again, just super proud. And you know, just the fact that he's been able to achieve his goals. And you know, he sat with me. We were at a Dortmund game when he was, you know, just got over there. And he, it's not like, well, I'd like to play here one day in front of 80,000. It's, I will, and I'm going to play there. And so he has a confidence. And that I would say is with all the young players coming through, it's mm-hmm. an amazing generation of players. So many of them here in MLS as well. And the guys that are in Europe, they believe in, in what they're doing. And that's very important. So much credit has to go to, you know, the support they've gotten, the investments that have been made. There's no doubt about it. The investments that have been made for these players between US soccer and MLS, the great coaching that exists now in our country, that's getting better and better. And so, you know, he's really proud to represent where he's from in the United States, and, you know, playing for such a big club like Dortmund for him is certainly an honor.
Yeah, we're excited about it as well. It's all of our victory. It's all of our accomplishments.
Everybody,
we feel,
that's right.
you're probably a little more involved than we are, but we still feel it. We're looking forward to seeing what Austin FC does as well in 2021. Thank you for taking the time, Claudio.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much to Claudio Reyna for taking the time to speak with us. We're very excited to see what he's building in Austin and hope that he's a, you know, recurring guest next year for Lazy Narratives to correct, or whatever it is that expansion team underdogs. We've kind of got a running list of every expansion team has to have their thing. I guess we'll have to see what Austin's will be. I mentioned before the interview, Kamal Miller taken with the fifth expansion pick, traded to Montreal for $250,000 in allocation money, as well as the 11th pick in this year's Super Draft, which is coming up on MLSsoccer.com in the new year. And Matt Doyle will be on that one. They also made a big trade a day or so later. Jordi Mihailovic traded from Chicago to Montreal. All total, the number that came out was $1 million in allocation. The way I've seen it broke out is $400,000 in GAM this year, $400,000 in GAM next year headed to Chicago, and then $200,000, which may have to do with hitting actual performances, floating around in there. Let's get your first reaction to this, because I think it popped eyes. For one, a trade this large, and then two, what it means for Jordi Mihailovic's career and these two clubs. Doyle, where do you stand right now with this deal?
The number shocked me at first, but then thinking of it within context, Montreal have not shown the ability to go overseas and find high-level young attacking pieces. They've had some guys who've had good runs, you know, sort of for half a season, but that's never sort of translated. Georgie's been a good MLS player for about 3 years now, and he was particularly good, I thought, this past year. So in a league where, you know, teams spend $3 million on an Ignacio Aliceta who doesn't give you much, no, I mean, spending $1 million in allocation money on a player like Georgie, who's never going to be an MVP caliber player, but has already shown that he can be very good, it actually kind of makes sense. So I like it from Montreal's point of view. We don't know how they're going to use him. I liked him as sort of a playmaking left winger, not a type of guy you run the game through, but a type of guy who can hit the final ball and is good at picking his spots off the ball. But we'll see. He seems, you know, he maybe has some flexibility to play inside as well. For Chicago, it surprised me. But I I guess that they, you know, they signed a bunch of their homegrown players from younger cohorts. Maybe they see some of those guys moving into the lineup. And obviously, you kind of expect when you get that much allocation money that there's going to be some sort of overseas signing that could move the needle. But it did surprise me because I thought of the things that they did best last year, Georgie was a big part of that.
Well, they already brought in a winger from Bulgaria, and you mentioned Ali Seda, who is a young DP for them. Both of them are technically wingers, so they do have some spots there. Kalen, when you look at this from a young player point of view in Mihailovic, you know, we talk a lot about young players, where they fit, how they're going to find their careers. This is now Mihailovic, Mason Toy, and Kamal Miller, three young MLS players that Montreal's gone out and traded for to kind of rebuild this team a little for Thierry Henry next year. How do you see that experience for Mihailovic? Is this something that can elevate his game? What do you see in a move like this and maybe more moves like this coming forward?
I'm not sure if Chicago was necessarily looking to make this move or move Georgie, but I think when you start to see some of the value that they were able to get, it started to make more sense. And maybe some of the changes they want to make within their side or people they're bringing in. But I think for Georgie, you know, this could be a really good thing for him. I think, you know, Montreal hasn't necessarily always built the best young players. I think even of like, so I was thinking back to the Chicago to Montreal pipeline where Harry Shipp went there before, you know, promising early career there, and then sort of had a better run out in Seattle later on. Justin Mapp went from Chicago to Montreal, and actually, yeah, Justin was sick at both places, actually.
I think Damadura did as well, although it's hard to remember where to wear, but yeah.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a pipeline there, but for Georgie, I mean, he's been right sort of at that level of some really incredible moments with the Fire, but then sometimes he gets dropped. And then he gets in with the national team, and he's had some bright moments with the national team too, and can be a part of this crop. But I think going to Montreal, I think he'll get a full run. I think when you look at Piet and Wanyama behind, they haven't necessarily had that piece to connect that sort of midfield to the front, and they've had to play a little bit more direct. So maybe Georgie plays a little bit more of a connecting role between those two places and then can chip in with some goals himself. And for Montreal overall, just getting young, talented. I think we all like Kamal Miller. We all like Mihailovic.
Mason Toy as well. Like they've spent almost $2 million in allocation money on those three players, who are all young domestic players. So yeah. I mean, they must have identified something within the league that they see as market inefficiency or betting, I guess, on Thierry Henry's ability to coach these guys up and get more out of them. Right? Yeah. Doesn't that seem what it's
totally
like?
And all three of those guys were like right on playing, kind of in. And but like should be, you know, we're arguing this guy should be a starter, this guy should be a starter. There's a ton of talent there. And so now they're like, let's put all these guys in. I think they're immediate upgrades based on what they have. They're young. And Thierry Henry keeps talking about it's not a 1 year, it's not a 2 year. Like, let's build over time. And if you say, give me Thierry Henry with Georgie, Toy, Miller, do I think he can improve those players alongside his staff? Yes, I think so. So I think overall finding those pieces around MLS that are maybe just on that fringe. I mean, we've seen that success. I don't know. I felt like there's always a group of guys like that where I was thinking for a while, Chris Mueller should have come and swooped him up before he broke out.
There's the Rapids guys sort like of that. Did this as well. Lalas Abubakar, Jonathan Lewis, Austin Trusty, which hasn't gone.
Kellen Acosta. Kellen I mean, they did just re-sign Trusty. I thought Trusty was better in the second half of the season. So maybe it is the market inefficiency, and maybe we've just been a little bit blind to it ourselves. But seeing Montreal operate in this way makes them a more interesting team to follow, because it's not just on field. It's actually kind of like a philosophical how to build a roster thing. And I'm kind of hyped for that.
And you also look at it and say, Kamal Miller, I thought is a starter in MLS, but he shouldn't have started over the two guys at center back in Orlando, because Orlando went and spent outside the league. The other thing is, which I haven't totally wrapped my head around, is you give up allocation money, but these guys come on good deals. So you don't need as much allocation money to get under the cap,
right?
Because Kamal Miller, Jordy Mihailovic, Mason Toy are domestic, so they don't take up international roster spots, which you could then trade later. And they come on reasonable deals that you can fit in under your cap if you then are going to go over and get international and stuff like that. So it's a really interesting move. I thought the Kamal Miller move was really interesting from them as well and makes a ton of sense, especially because he could be a Canadian international coming forward, which would be pretty cool to see for Montreal. Another trade that was rumored or just got reported to go down was Fafa Picot headed to Houston for a minimum of 200K in GAM, potentially 275 in chem, in 275 total.
I can report this is Instagram official gossip. It's not on the gram. Yeah, yeah, it's gone live.
So that's the only report we need. That's the new Paul Tenorio facts and thank fiction. And then one other thing, the reentry draft just began. It sounds like Atlanta United took Andrew Gutman with the number one pick. But there's a belief, there's rumors out there that they might trade those rights. Gutman makes sense as a pickup, but with George Bello doesn't totally make sense in Atlanta. So we'll see what happens with that pick. We've also got free agency opening up over the course of the next few days. There are a lot of names in there. A lot of these are players that are either out of contract or didn't have their option picked up by their current team. There's a large list of players. One we know that will be available is Kevin Molino. He put out his Instagram post, and you should follow him on Instagram if you don't, because it's great music all the time from the Hot Boy. Saying that he won't be back in Minnesota. We don't know if that means he'll be back in MLS with a different team or he'll be going overseas for another contract. Doyle, we talked about this a bit on Monday. I kind of thought that out there in MLS, someone would pay him more than what Minnesota can pay him, whether it's a DP contract or a high-level TAM. To me, it just feels like he's better than people in MLS. You don't have to pay a transfer fee, so that takes away some of the money you have to give in that deal. And at 31, it might be dangerous, but for 2 years, he's better than, I don't want to throw Ignacio Alicete under the bus 13 times in this show, but he's better than players that other teams in MLS have spent on.
Yeah, he is. And but the question with Molino is, will he hold up? Yeah. Like this past year, he was fantastic, but it was an outlier of a season because he didn't get injured and he was as productive as he was. DP seems too much for me. High level TAM even seems too much for me, but something, you know, approaching seven figures per year over the course of 2 years, that if your title window is now, that actually makes a lot of sense. Like he would be, you know, if you're Seattle and you're looking at him on one wing and Jordan Morris on the other and Rui Diaz up top and Ladero pulling the strings, like that would make a lot of sense.
What about Sporting KC?
Can you play center back? Like, Sporting KC has a lot of good wingers. I'm not sure that they need to spend what you know, what allocation money they have on another winger. I think they need more in central midfield and central defense. So I'm sure there's a market out there for Kevin Molino, and I know it's Instagram official that he's not signing in Minnesota again, but it wouldn't shock me to see them agree on a number that brings him back, because we saw what he did in the postseason. He was freaking awesome. And if you have a chance to keep him and Bibello, that partnership together, you probably want to make that happen.
Kalen, taking a look at the free agency list, does anyone else stand out to you? Is there a spot that you've thought of where you really hope someone ends up somewhere? It's a pretty massive list, which is kind of hard to cipher through. Will Trapp's on that list, but the rumors are already pretty heavily that he's headed to Minnesota in a trade, which at the same time might mean Ozzie Alonso is available in free agency. Kalen, is there anyone that caught your eye or any move that caught your eye?
Well, first of all, just to go back just real quick to the Molino thing, if you're a Minnesota fan, would you not be panicked right now?
I would, but I think it's the reality of a salary cap league. You have a DP in Reynoso. Like, you've spent money in the attack. You had Molino on a good deal. I don't know that you can keep him because they probably feel they still need to go out and get a nine.
They were a minute away from MLS Cup. And without Molino, I think that drops them way further down the list. So I would be very concerned if I were them. If I'm looking at the free agency list, I'm always going to go. I'm really interested in what happens with VWP, because I think we saw this year that he can be, you know, a big time contributor to a really good team. So I'm curious about that one. Wando. I expect that to get done in San Jose. I would be shocked if it didn't. have sort of flirted just on my own daydreams of him at LAFC to see how many goals he could score there. But I don't expect that to happen at all in any world. But yeah, I mean, those are the, I mean, BWP is really the one where I'm looking at to say, all right, well, can he, I would hope that he figure that they figure it out at LAFC, but because I thought it had worked so well. But I want to see him playing on a good team, and I don't know.
Freddie Montero on this list. Seattle Sounders could pick him up as well. Kai Kamara on this list. The one that stuck out to me is Diego Fagundes. Longtime player for the Revs now. I think he holds many records for just appearances and minutes and all that stuff because he started at the age of 17 with that group. Versatile player. It'll be interesting to see what the market is for guys who are good homegrowns coming into their second contract and third contracts across MLS, similar to the Jordi Mihailovic move as well. One last piece we want to hit before we get to the mailbag real quick is in Miami, Inter Miami. We already know, let Paul McDonough go, who was the head of their soccer side and business side as president. And then they had a end of year meeting with Diego Alonso, who's currently their head coach. Coming out of that, Sam Stasko put out a rumor, which then Paul Tenorio turns into a report for The Athletic, saying that Diego Alonso had parted ways with Inter Miami. They then went back and had to change that and say, I'm sorry, we got the story wrong. Turns out the story was wrong because Diego Alonso was wrong about his understanding of the meeting he was sitting in as one of the members of that meeting. He believed he had been let go. Miami said, no, that is not the case. What went down? So Inter Miami, a team that I couldn't get you guys to stop talking about 2 years ago when it was Luis Suarez and Messi and Griezmann and what's the other one's name? James Rodriguez, all that stuff. Now there's not much to say about this team. Kalen, you see something like this happen. What's your take on what the next few months look like for Inter Miami?
Come on, man. How am I supposed to answer that? I mean, I have no, it's confusing, right? It's very confusing to have a manager not know whether to have that type of confusion happen doesn't, that's very difficult to understand. And I think, you know, the other big question for me is who's making these decisions right now, because Paul McDonough's gone, that a lot of the senior brass on the technical side are gone. So I'm assuming this is now up to ownership, but then when you're looking at the way that roster was constructed a little bit, you almost felt like some of the moves at the end of the season, I started asking, okay, with Matuidi and Higuain, were these moves kind of made in panic because the team hadn't gotten off to a good start and they needed to sort of solve an issue right away? But then now does that sort of hamstring you where you get another age older and you've got to figure out a new manager coming in and you can't really make as many moves as you could before? So the questions, I mean, they need to make changes now. But again, part of the problem with Miami before was that they didn't have the people in place to, you know, they made decisions without a head coach. And then they had to build on the fly. And yes, in a very difficult year where there was just a bunch of stop start, they didn't have really time to figure things out together or even train at times. But they're kind of heading towards that same spot again, are they not? I mean, it's like you're going into an offseason, a super draft, you know, looking towards the preseason or whatever it is. And you're in a similar spot where you don't have a manager. You don't even actually have the people in above the manager to make these types of decisions and try and fix things. So they've got to figure things out, and they've got to figure it out pretty fast.
We've seen in other sports the connection now where you just go straight from broadcasting to running a team. Kalen Carr, Inter Miami. Miami, call me. I'll call Kalen. I'll get something done. I'll only take a little sliver of the deal off the top. Let's hit the mailbag real quick before we get out of here. Derek Ashleman says, you guys were talking about where Matt Beisler should go, one of the free agents last episode. Why not RSL? They need a veteran center back after Nedim retired, and ending his career playing with his brother Nick Beisler would be a big sell for RSL. Could be an interesting one from Derek. And I'm going to close you guys out on one big one. It's from Sam in St. Paul. He says, what are your soup power rankings? He then lists five, none of which would be on my soup power rankings. I'm borderline offended.
Huh.
Does anyone have a quick answer for me?
Do you consider pozole a soup? Because pozole is way... So pozole is way up there. Then there's a Tuscan white bean and kale soup that I actually make with chickpeas and spinach instead. I really dig that one. Those are probably my top two. Yeah.
And that is it For 2020, Kalen, do you have a soup?
I don't even get to give my soup. Are you kidding me?
Wow. Kalen, I didn't think you'd have
after everything we've been through this year.
You don't seem like a soup eater.
Not a big soup guy.
See?
But I would say sizzling rice. That's my go-to.
Sizzling rice.
Which is hard to do on takeout these days.
The only correct answers were potato leek soup and matzo ball soup, but you know, I don't want to be typecast or anything at the end of this show. And on that note, happy end of the year to everyone. Whatever it is you do, if you do celebrate or don't celebrate, try and enjoy it as much as you can. Please be safe, wear a mask. Of course, we won't be on this show, but Anders will still be on the Twitter feed. Andrew just moved to Kansas, so he'll probably be on 27 hours a day as well, because he's got nothing to do and loves to tweet at himself, which is always the best to watch. And we'll all be around. So feel free to jump into our feeds, into our DMs. Whatever is going on, we'll be back in 2021.
First week of January.
If we ever get there. But the odds seem against us, but who knows? Good luck to LAFC and CCL. Congratulations to the Columbus crew once again. And on that, thanks for joining us.